Morning. Today's daf in Bava Basra is Yud Aleph. We are on the bottom of Yud Amud Beis. We are starting the two dots with a second story regarding Ephrahimah. It's the topic of discussion now for the last 2 days, 2 days plus, has been the mitzvah of tzedakah. The Mishnah on Zayin Amud Beis. We'll say now 3 days. The Mishnah on Zayin Amud Beis is the mitzvah. The Mishnah. Mishnah on Zayin Amud Beis discussed the communal responsibilities that a person has when living in a chatzir, when living in a courtyard, and the larger communal responsibilities that he has when he lives in a city. And he has to contribute towards the needs of the chatzir and the needs of the city. As such, allowed the Gemara to launch into a long discussion regarding the mitzvah of tzedakah. We discussed a little bit of halacha, and the Gemara went through a lot of drush, a lot of conceptualization, a lot of hashkafa in terms of the importance of this mitzvah. We're continuing the Gemara towards the bottom of the Amud, and we're starting today with Ephrahimah, and this is going to be our second story regarding Ephrahimah. She is a mother, Shmuel Malka. Shmuel Malka was a king at the time of Shmuel and of Rav Nachman, and the mother wasn't Jewish, the son wasn't Jewish, and it's significant for this section of the Gemara as the Gemara goes over the following. So she sent 400 zuz for the purpose of tzedakah to Rabbi Ami v'lo kiblinhu. And Rabbi Ami refused to take it. He wouldn't take the tzedakah from her. Shadrinu, kame de Rava v'kablinu. So then she sent it in front of Rava, and Rava did accept it. Mishum Shalamachus, and the reason because of Shalamachus. Shalamachus, the political fallout that would occur in the event that she did not accept the money. So as a result of Rava wanting there to be a good relationship between the Jews and the non-Jewish government, so therefore accepting the money, the idea of Shalamachus. And so Rava thought, obviously, that was important enough where they were to take the tzedakah. So obviously there are competing issues over here in terms of whether you should or should not take the money. Rabbi Ami says not to, and Rava says to. And so far, all we know at this point in time is the svar behind Rava. Rava says, I'll take the money because of this idea of Shalamachus. So Shama Rabbi Ami Ikbid. Now Rabbi Ami heard that Rava took the money and he got very upset. And obviously he got very upset because he felt, for reasons we haven't explored yet, but he felt that you shouldn't take the money. And he felt that that was the correct protocol. So he really, he didn't like the fact that Rava took the money. And quite frankly, also looks bad. Meaning, one Rav takes the money, the other Rav doesn't take the money. Quite frankly, it looks bad. But he feels the Gemara over here obviously is dealing with the issues, and the issues are is that Rabbi Ami felt that it was wrong. So I'm late. So now we're going to see what is bothering Rabbi Ami, and that is the following. The pasuk in Yeshayahu reads, "Bivosh kitzira tishabarna nashos bar meiros asam," that the Navi Yeshayahu says that when they dry up, so they're easily broken, and Nashim Baos Meiros Asam, women can come and could literally light them up, ignite them. Okay, the pasuk in Yeshayahu obviously is metaphoric, and Rashi in the very bottom explains. Rashi in the bottom of the Amud, I'm reading, Kishetechalas Chusha Biyadam, when they are no longer have any Zchuyos in their hands, V'yaveh Shlach Luchis, and they're totally dried up, they have no longer any moisture, and Maitzet Staka Shlahem, and in this context it means them having given Staka, giving Staka is a zechus. By them having given tzedakah, that provides for them a zechus. And we want to do is we want to basically cut off the zechuyos as yishpru, and then and only then can they be broken. So Rabbi Ami feels that they shouldn't accept money from them because every time they give tzedakah, that provides another zechus for them. And we don't want them to be in a position where they have all the zechuyos and then they cannot be broken. Okay, so the Gemara continues explaining how each side handles the other person's the other Amara's issue. So Rava Mishim Shalamachus. Now Rava feels okay, meaning not arguing with the value that was presented by Rabbi Ami, but Rava says, look, when all said and done, the Ephrahimah, Shmuel Malka, they are the monarchy of the day, and if we don't accept the money, that will create ill will between us and them, and we don't want that. So Rabbi Ami, Nami Mishum Shalom Achas. So now, as far as Rabbi Ami is concerned, Shalom Achas also is an extraordinarily important value. So what is he going to do? He's just going to ignore it. So Ibai Leila Mefagin Alani of the Kochavim. So what he should have done, says Rabbi Ami, is he should have taken the money from Ephraimus, and he should have distributed the money, but not distributed the money to a Jew, but rather distribute the money to a non-Jew. So the Rava, Nami Lani of the Kochavim Yavino. Now the Gemara points out, now what is Rava going to say about that argument? Rava actually has nothing to say about that argument. In fact, that's exactly what he did. Rava took the money and distributed it to the non-Jews. And as far as Rabbi Ami getting upset, is because of Lo Simek Hameh. Because Rabbi Ami did not hear the entire story. It sounds like from the Gemara, he just kind of leapt to a conclusion before getting all the details and getting all the facts. And that is why Rabbi Ami got so upset. A couple questions over here, which we can ask. One I don't have an answer to, the other I do, because Rashi says, why didn't Rabbi Ami take the money and then distribute it to non-Jews himself? Meaning, he feels so strongly that you should accept no money, and his point of dispute with Rav is, I know there's this idea of Shalom Achos, so you should take the money and distribute it to non-Jews, which is in fact what Rav did. Why didn't Rabbi Ami do exactly that? Okay, I asked that question, and I don't know. I don't have an answer in terms of why didn't Rabbi Ami take the money and just simply distribute it to non-Jews. I do, however, have an answer to the following question. You know, this is not the first time Ephraimus gave money, gave tzedakah. Right? All you need to do is just go back to yesterday's daf, and you'll remember that Ephraimus gave money, gave tzedakah, and she gave it for, she earmarked the tzedakah for Mitzvah Rabbah. And the Gemara went on to describe that Mitzvah Rabbah is the Mitzvah of Pidyon Shvuyim. That took us back to Daf Ches. If you look at the very bottom of Ches Amud Aleph, so the Gemara over there writes, it's Ifra Hormiz Imadish Vermalka Shadri Arnaka Dinari Lekamad to Rav Yosef. She sent a chest full of money to Rav Yosef, Amalah Havala Mitzvah Rabbah. And she said, I want this money to be dedicated to Mitzvah Rabbah. And from the Gemara over there, it seems pretty clear that Rav Yosef accepted the money. So this is not the first time she offered money for tzedakah. And previously, the Gemara made no issue whatsoever about her offering the money and us accepting the money. So, well, she said Mitzvah Rabbah, but it's when all said and done, it's tzedakah. So why previously was there no issue whatsoever of taking the money? And over here, Rava, Rabbi Ami, they were so upset about, well, one of them was so upset about taking the money. So what happened previously? So Rashi, in the very top of the Amud, on Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, so he writes, Rabbi Ami, Da'ani of the Kocham Chilkam Rava. Okay, they're just explaining the Gemara. He didn't know that, meaning this was just the explanation that Rabbi Ami didn't know that Rava was distributing the money to the non-Jews. Now, Vahanach Damara, now Rashi quotes the Gemara that I just cited, the Shadra, Nami Ephraim Islam Mitzvah Rabbah, where she did give money to Mitzvah Rabbah, Mishum Shalom Achos, Nami Kablinu. Now, the money was accepted by Rav Yosef, and Rashi immediately assumes, well, that also has to be as a result of Shalom Achos. V'lo Esherlei, L'chol Kamani of De Kochavim. Now, over there, why not accept the money? Now, it's true she earmarked the money for Mitzvah Rabbah, but why not just simply take the money, nod your head, say, yeah, sure, no problem at all. Shalom Alch, I'll give it to Mitzvah Rabbah. I mean, we'll give it for Pidyon Shvuyim. And then after she left, then just simply give it to Anei Akum. Rashi says that could not have been done. The Asur Lignov Dasa Brios Vafilo Dato Shov Dikochavim. Because you cannot mislead somebody. You cannot be disingenuous, and this is what's called Geneva's Das, and Geneva's Das applies to both Jew and non-Jew as well. So so Rashi says it just simply couldn't have been done. Once you accept the money for Pidyon Shvuyim, that's what the money has to be applied to that. But if the money was just given for the purpose of distribution, and there was no clear indication in terms of who would be the recipient of that money, so then there's no Geneva's Das to just simply earmark that money for Akum. Ain Geneva's Das. Rashi goes on to write, Dinu Nami Yodesh Yisrael B'Gim L'Farnes Ani Yov D'Kochavim. Because we, in terms of our distribution of our tzedakah, we give it to all different types of recipients. We give it to Jew, we give it to non-Jew. So there is no Geneva's Das if there was just simply a giving to the gabbai, and the gabbai says, okay, thank you very much, and then the gabbai turns around and gives it to Akum, that's fine, because we would do that anyway. Rashi reminds us of the Gemara in Gittin, this is the fifth parak, Mefarnasin, Ani of the Kochavim, Im Ani Yisrael, Im Nedarki Shalom. We know that there's a Tikkun Olam, there's an institution where we give to both Jew and non-Jew alike, and that's because of Darchei Shalom. That's just a way of keeping the peace between us and the non-Jews.
Yeah, but the fact that she gave the money to a Jewish indicates that she wanted it to go to a Jew. Otherwise, she could have done
okay.
It
herself. Okay, I hear that. I just went through the Rashi. So Rashi says that he thinks that it's totally within the parsha of being genuine. It's not misleading, says Rashi. Okay, so all right. That takes us to the end of the Maisa Vifer Hormuz. We continue in the Gemara on Yad Aleph and Aleph at the very top of the Amud Tanya. We learned in the following Brisa: Amar Lav al Binyamin Atzadik. This is regarding Binyamin Atzadik. Presumably, this is a reference to actually the Shevet Binyamin, meaning the Shevet, meaning the son of Yaakov. Okay, not perfectly clear, but. He was the gabbai. He was the one in charge of tzedakah. A woman came to him during times of famine. And she asks for an allocation. So he has to unfortunately break the news to her. There's nothing here in the pushka. So So she says, look, it's me, it's my seven children, we're going to die if you don't give us money. So she's desperate. Amad ufarnasa mishalo. So he gives her tzedakah, and he gives her tzedakah right out of his own pocket. So whatever he had, whatever resources he had, he gave to her. So liyamim chalav anatalamus. So at one point in time, Binyamin HaTzadik was very sick and he was about to die. Amr malach eshos v'nei kosh baruch ribon sha'olam. At amr kol mekayim nefesh achas mishol ki lukim olam alei. You know that anyone saves nefesh achas, just one Jewish person. So it's as if you fulfill the entire world, you sustain the entire world. Rashi points out, where did Hashem say that? Meaning, where is that coming from? How do you know that? So second Rashi on the Amud. Mitaros chalamanu lefichach nivra adam yichidi. Rashi says that is why when humanity was created, humanity was started with one person. La malacha kol mekayim nefesh achas mitzvah ki ilukiyam olam alei. Uksiv, and Rashi notes the pasuk says kol deme achicha. So damu v'dam zro asav. So when Hevel and Cain have their argument, fight, and death, so Akash Baruch Hu says to Cain, you know the voice of deme, the bloods. We have that in English. We don't have in the plural, but the bloods of your brother are calling out to me. And that means, and Rashi over there in Chumash, and Rashi right here in the Gemara says, what does it mean, Demei, in the plural? It means your brother, his descendants, all his future descendants. Now that's in the negative. The same thing is true with the positive as well. If you save somebody's life, and that means that really what you're doing is saving an entire world. And whatever we say, whatever we can say in terms of the negative, actually is greater when you could just simply take it and convert it into the positive. So if killing somebody is like killing an entire world, saving somebody is ki'ilu, you're saving an entire world. And however we could say that greater, I mean, I don't know how we could say greater, but it's more true when it comes to tov than it comes to ra. So back to our Gemara. So Binyamin HaTzadik saved the life of this woman and her seven sons. It's ki'ilu ki'im olam alei. It's like saving the entire world. And so Binyamin HaTzadik, back to the Gemara, Binyamin HaTzadik, tichya isha v'shiva banel yamus b'shan muatos. And it's not fair that he should die at such a young age. He saved this woman. He saved the seven children of these women. So miyad karolo gzardino. At that point in time, the gzardin of Binyamin was torn up, and he lived longer. How much longer? So the Gemara quotes another braisa. Tano osivolo esrim mishnayim shana al shnosav. An additional 22 years over that. 22 years comes up a number of times throughout the Gemara in terms of a unit of significant time of life. So, okay. He was given, I think 15. Yeah, it's good. I had the same number floating in my head. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan. Ma'isa b'Munbaz HaMelech shebiz beiz otzrosav ve'otzros avosav mishnei b'tzoros. So there was an episode with Munbaz HaMelech. Now Munbaz HaMelech, Rashi writes, Banasha b'nasha Hilni Amaka mizera chashmanim. So he was the son of Hilni Amaka, and he was a descendant of the chashmanim. Okay. Recently we went to the end of the Chashmonaim, the Herod who was a slave, who claimed he was from the Chashmonaim, but truth of the matter is he was an Eved, and he killed the Chashmonaim, and there was only one daughter that was left, and she committed suicide. So recently we went through the end of the Chashmonaim period. Here we are somewhere towards the end. This is Hilni Amalka's son, Munbaz HaMelech. And what he did is he took the from the king's treasury, and he took the money and he distributed it all for tzedakah. And the Gemara goes on to explain. So v'otzros avosav v'shnei b'tzoros. Now it was years of famine, so people really needed the money, so he gave it out for tzedakah. V'chavro alav achava v'esaviv. So family members came in, the brothers came in, and matriarchs came in from the royal family, and they basically said to him, "Are you out of your mind? What is wrong with you? Amru lo avosecha ganzu v'osifu. Ashal avosam. You know, this is the family treasury. It has been amassed and collected for years, for generations. Ve'ata mevazvazam, and you're just simply distributing it to people. Like, what is wrong with you? I'm a lam. So he says to them, avosai ganzu lamata v'ani ganasti lamala. So he's going to make a number of points, all basically pointing to the same thing, which is, I'm giving it out to tzedakah. That's much more important than just simply amassing the fortune for the family. He's going to say it a number of different ways. They're all beautiful. Let's go. Number one, my forefathers, ganzu lamata, they collected it for this world. V'ani ganasti lamala, but my collection, however, is going to be lamala, meaning all the zechuyos that I accrue by giving out the tzedakah are going to be credit to me above. Shenemar emes me'eretz tatzmich v'tzedek mishamayim nishkaf. Emes in this context, which emes normally means truth, but in this context means giving out tzedakah. So emes me'eretz tatzmich. So what's going to do? It's going to sprout in this world. V'tzedek mishamayim nishkaf. But meanwhile, it's going to have a view from shamayim. Okay. Avosai number two. Avosai ganzu b'makom shayash shalatas bo v'ani ganasti. Number two, you and your family, and I should say our family, right? This is Munbaz talking. You're right. Us and our family have been amassing the money, but truth of the matter is, it's in the storehouse, and somebody could break it and somebody could take it. What I'm doing is I'm creating a new collection, a new fund, and because all the zechuyos are being amassed up in heaven, no one's going to be able to touch it. We know that tzedek and mishpat are at the base of the kisei hakavod of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's untouchable. So I'm sorry, I read that. Avosai, this is already now number three. Avosai ganzu dvar she'ein oseh peros v'ani ganasti. Also, when our father and forefathers and our family have been amassing all this money, so what happens? There are no dividends. The money's not getting invested and reinvested, and the dividends are not getting invested. And if I could just simply say, as good financial advice, also inflation is cutting away at the value of it. But okay, that's neither here nor there. So. You can see I've had these conversations already. So anyway, so it's just sitting there, and there's no payros and there's no dividends. And meanwhile, I'm gonna put them in the place where there are dividends. Shenamar imrut sadikitov ki prima alayim yochelu. They're gonna eat prima alayim, which means that by giving it to tzedakah, so the zechuyos are going to amass, and not only the zechuyos are going to amass, but there are going to be dividends as well. Avosai, this is now number four. Avosai ganzu otzros mamon v'ani gazati otzros nefashos. They're just amassing money, and I'm amassing lives. Meaning, with all the tzedakah that I'm giving, I am saving people's lives. In doing so, it is shnei b'tzoros, it's years of famine. People would die otherwise, so I'm saving people's lives. Shenemar pri tzadik eitz chayim v'lokech nefashos chacham. Okay. And number five, Avosai ganzu l'achem v'ani ganasi l'atzmi. When our forefathers take the money and just simply make a storehouse out of it, what are they doing? Are they really doing it for themselves? The answer, of course, is no. Because what's going to happen is that they're going to die, and then it's just going to simply go to the next generation. And good. And so what did that accomplish? So they're not even amassing the money for themselves. Meanwhile, when I take the money and I use it for tzedakah, so I'm applying it towards myself. We know, we quoted this pasuk already at the end of Bava Metzia, that when you take the mashkan and you give it back, it's considered to you tzedakah. But right now we're focusing on ulecha. It's going to be to you. When you give tzedakah, the credit goes and is applied directly to you. So I'm getting the credit. Number six, Avosai ganzu la'olam hazeh v'ani ganasi la'olam haba. It's a very similar idea to what we expressed earlier. It's just, you know, the Gemara just keeps going and pounding away at this point of tzedakah really creates a legacy. Masha ain't Cain. When you just amass money, so shenemar v'alach lefanecha tzidkecha kvod Hashem yasvecha. Kadosh Baruch Hu will gather your tzedakah that you give. He will gather it in, meaning it will be rewarded for you in olam haba. Masha ein kein. If all you're doing is just simply amassing money, so it's not going to do anything for you. It's not going to help you in olam haba. So basically, six different ways that Munbras tried to explain to his family that giving tzedakah actually is the best way to invest the money of his family and his fortune. Okay. That's it. When I say that's it, meaning that ends the Gemara's discussion regarding tzedakah. So in Baba Basra, Daf Chaf Tes Dapim, Ches Tes Yud, and a small portion of Yud Aleph is dedicated to the topic of tzedakah. So we have a good amount of the first parak of Baba Basra that treated us to a discussion regarding the mitzvah of tzedakah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
All those things about yourself, about myself getting reward, there's no mention that, and especially he's trying to plead his case to his family, that there's actually schus for the family.
But yeah, it's a good observation. I also would like to think that they're going to get something out of it.
They will.
Okay. All right, right, but it's not mentioned. It's a fair observation. We are going back to the Mishnah, all the way back to Zion Amud Beis, and the Gemara is just finishing up the last point of the Mishnah. When do you become a member of the city? In other words, you have to contribute. At what point exactly? So the Mishnah says, Kami Yehei Be'ir, I'm just going back to the Mishnah, I'm just reviewing what we said now in from Daf Yomi perspective 4 days ago. In Daf Yomi perspective, that's a long time ago. So Kami Yehei Be'ir V'Yehei Kan She'ir. So at what point in time now do you become a member of the city with the responsibility of making contribution? So Yud Beis Chodesh, it is 12 months. But then, Kana Babayis Dira Hareu Kan She'ir Miyad. Once you buy a house, so then immediately at that point in time, you can be billed and invoiced as now you are a member immediately. And the Gemara makes the following comment. And a simple observation in that our Mishnah does not follow the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, the Tanya Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Omer, Im Kana Ba Karka Kol Shehu, Harehu Kan She'ir. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel does not require that you buy an entire house. Once you buy a piece of property and how big a parcel, Kol Shehu. Actually, doesn't matter. Any parcel that you buy automatically makes you considered a part of the city and with the responsibility of contributing. Now we do have another Brisa, and the Brisa does present the opinion of Shimon Gamliel, but in a somewhat more modified version, where in the second Brisa you have to buy a significant amount of property, one where you could build a house on that property. Still, it's different than our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says a base dira, you have to buy a house. In this Brisa, it's just a property, but certainly this Brisa and the Brisa that we quoted previously are not in perfect agreement with one another. The previous Brisa said, according to Rosh Hashanah and Gamliel, any amount of property. This Brisa says a property where you could stick a house on it. So dira harei kan, I'm sorry, harui lebeis dira harei kan she'ir. So trei tanai v'alibu d'Rav Shimon Gamliel. So the Gemara says, not so elegant, but the Gemara says, okay, there are two tanaim, each one of them expressing a slightly different viewpoint of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Okay, they both agree that, according to Shimon Gamliel, you must start contributing the moment you buy property, but they disagree, these two brises, in terms of how much property you need to buy in order to be a contributing member of the community. Adkan. Well, we continue now in the first parak of Baba Basra, and we are in the Mishnah in the middle of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, and a discussion of dividing a courtyard. Okay, just so we all understand, we in Erevin we discussed this at length, but just the basic structure of their living. Being that we live in South Florida and we live in these little associations, so we can kind of relate, kind of. Our associations actually are not such a bad model in terms of how it used to be back in the good old days. In that what you had was you had a house. The house was open up to the front. The front was much more used than the back. Back of the houses back then were used infrequently, right? Our backyards are, you know, much more popular, if you will. But their backyards were not used that frequently. The front of the house was used much more frequently. That was the chatzah, that was the courtyard. A courtyard generally was a common area that was opened up to more than one house. You had multiple houses opening up to a singular courtyard, right? If I can go back to my days in Kew Garden Hills, like those townhouses that was so popular when we were younger and had absolutely no money. So those... that's a good description of basically all these houses opening up into a common courtyard. Then what happened is that the common courtyard would open up into a mavui, would open up into what I would describe as an alleyway, but it's not an alleyway, it's not maybe not the best way to say it, but it would open up into an alleyway, and then finally the mavui would open up into Rishos HaRabim. So basically, in order to get home back in the good old days, so you would basically go from the Rishos HaRabim through the mavui to the courtyard, a common courtyard, and from there you would go into your house. Okay. What we've been discussing since the beginning of the Mishnah, since the beginning of the Masechta, is this idea where we're going to divide the courtyard, meaning it was a common courtyard, and we don't want a common anymore. I would like my private space, you would like your private space, and that's exactly what we've been discussing since the beginning of the Masechta, where we're now going to divide the common courtyard so that I can go outside of my house and I can be private, still be private, and you'll go outside your house and you'll still be private as well. And so what we've been learning is basically what is the wall going to look like? And as we learned, the minhag hamakom, meaning whatever the prevalent minhag is in terms of the material used to build a wall, that's how you're going to build a wall. What we're going to learn now together in our Mishnah is basically, does a courtyard have to be a minimum size in order to be divided amongst these two people? And that's what we're going to learn together right now. The Mishnah says, Ein cholkin es hachatzar ashi arba amos lezeh v'arba amos lezeh. You do not divide a courtyard until each one can get a minimum of 4 amos. Now, 4 amos, of course, is a linear measurement, and it's only one direction. We're talking about an area, so obviously we need 2 directions. We need length and width. So whenever you see 4 amos being presented like this, it's actually a description of both length and width. So it means an area of 4 by 4.
Not 2 by 2.
Right, correct. The area over here is 4 by 4. So it's 4 amas by 4 amas. Just so if you want to visualize together with me, an am is approximately 2 feet. That's a very generous version of how long an am is, but for our purposes, the math is just a little bit easier. So it's basically 8 by 8 foot. It's not that big. An area of
after you build the wall.
Huh? After you build the wall. Right, presumably that's I agree with that. So not presumably, I do agree with that, but yeah, I Libby Omerly, that's right. So 8 by 8 feet. It's really not a lot of area. 8 by 8 foot, the smallest room in your house is not 8 by 8 foot. It's larger than 8 by 8 feet. It's really a small area. I think it's fair to say back in the good old days, everything was just smaller, right? Whenever I make my travels to around the world, South America, right? A couple of summers ago, I went to Europe. So the world is just smaller. Streets are smaller. Houses are smaller. Cars are smaller. You know, in America, things are big. But anyway, it's my observation. So anyway, so as long as each one of the courtyards is going to be getting an area of 4 by 4 amos, so then so that is sufficient grounds. I say that here literally. It's sufficient grounds to create a division between the two members of the courtyard. So lezar b'amos, lezar b'amos. V'lo et samsei. So let me read the Mishnah again from the beginning. Ein cholkin es hachatzar ashi arba amos lezeh v'arba amos lezeh. V'lo es hasadeh ashi ei ba tisha kabin lezeh v'tisha kabin lezeh. Same thing is true regarding a field. Each one needs a significant amount. Now for a sadeh, for a field, significant is going to be 9 kabin. Now kav is a volume. It's not a linear measurement, but you know that we've done this time and again. Whenever you measure a field is going to be measured based on the amount it can produce. So we look at a land not in terms of its linear measurement, but its production. As long as the sadeh can produce 9 kabin of produce, of yield, so then each one is getting a significant amount, therefore it can be divided. Now Rav Yehuda disagrees on the amount, and he basically halves it. 9 halves for this one, 9 halves for this one. Now in terms of a garden, where presumably in the sada we're planting grain and wheat and the gina, so we're planting fruit. So in the gina, so you need 1/2 kav for this person, 1/2 kav for this person. Rabbi Akiva Amar Beis Haroven, and Rabbi Akiva disagrees on the amount, and basically he also halves it. Half of a half is a quarter. V'loas a traklin, v'loas a morin, v'loas a shovach, v'loas a talis, v'loas a merchas, v'loas beis abad, v'loas beis a shlachin. Now, when we're talking about dividing any other item between two partners, so traklin and moran seems to be different types of houses. That's how Rashi explains it, right? Rashi says mine paltin, okay, different types of homes. Okay, dividing a home, I guess it's just a little bit strange to think about, meaning, okay, whatever. We're going to make a duo. And a shovach is some sort of birdcage, and the talis is a garment, and a merchatz is a bathhouse, and a beis abad is an olive press, and beis hashlachin is a field that is irrigated. So basically, each one needs a significant amount. The Gemara does not go into specifics over here, what is considered a specific amount, but each one needs a significant amount. So basically, let's go over the basic ground rules of everything we just said. As long as each person has a significant amount, where shmo alav, meaning it's still called by that item. So if we had a talis large enough where if we halved it, each one would be still be getting what's called a talis, smaller version obviously, but it still has shame talis, so then that is the kind of division where one partner can force the other. Now, up until now, all these measurements meant what? It meant that I can force a split. So that in the, that we live, let's go back to the original premise, the original point of the courtyard, of the shur courtyard. As long as each one of them is getting dal amos, so one can say to the other, I really don't care what your opinion is. I am forcing a division of the courtyard. Each one of us is getting a significant amount of dal by dalid, and therefore you could force a split. But the Mishnah says, I mean, it's kind of an obvious point, but we'll say it anyway. If each one is getting a less than that, but they're both amenable to the split, so then you split. Now, Kisvei HaKodesh HaFapisha Shem Rotzim Lo Yachloku. Now, as far as Kisvei HaKodesh is concerned, let's say we have anyone of Sifrei Tanakh. Okay, going back to the good old days. So back in the good old days, so they didn't have books, meaning the way you and I have them. You know, bound books, that's a modern innovation. Back in the good old days, whenever you had something that was written down, it was written down in a scroll, and it was rolled up, and that was called it was called a sefer.
Not even e-books.
Right. I know. I date myself when I talk about books being a modern innovation. But back in the good old days, whenever you had a sefer, so it was basically it was a scroll. It looked like a sefer Torah. So if you had sefer Yoshua looked like a sefer Torah. It was a scroll. It was written on the scroll. It was rolled up, etc., etc. So what if you had, let's say, dad owned, let's say, Nevi'im Rishonim. Right, just throwing out an example, where he had a scroll that had in it Yoshua and Shmuel and Malach. And the kids inherited it, and one kid says to the other, you know, I really like Sefer Yoshua. So let's do the following. Let's take the Sefer, and we'll just simply cut it. And I'll take Sefer Yoshua, and you'll take Shmuel and Malach. Okay, good? So the Mishnah says no. No good. Kisvei HaKodesh af al pi sheshneim rotzim lo yachloku. And even if both parties are amenable to the splitting up of the sefer, you cannot do it. Rashi on the Mishnah says, Chavdal tzvarim v'hayu regilim lekosron begilion kisefer Torah. Rashi said very succinctly what I said A little bit lengthier, but Rashi's good like that. I'm sorry, Kesefer Torah Shelanu. Leficha genai hadavar lechatchan. So Rashi just simply says it's a genai. Just simply not appropriate to take a sefer and divide it. Okay, so therefore, it should not be divided. Now, this line of the Mishnah is going to be a fantastic segue to what we're going to be doing a couple days from now, which is that we're going to be talking about the Svarim of Tanakh, and we're going to be talking about authorship. Right? Coming up later in the first paragraph of Baba Basra, a couple days from now, is that we're going to go over all the Svarim of Tanakh, and we're going to be describing and discussing who the author is of each one of the Sifrei Tanakh. Stay tuned.
Why is it a Kenan?
Right, especially if we're cutting it on the example that I gave. In other words, if I'm taking Yeshua and you're taking, but I guess the idea is that it's just, Pasnish. Pasnish is the best way I could describe it. It's not, that's a good description of Ganai, but why is it a Ganai?
Something that's whole, you're making it not whole.
I know, I'm right. I'm also saying
that all this Sefer Kochim cannot be like individualized. You have it all. A scroll has to be complete, like all.
Okay, could be. Danny, I don't have a good way of articulating. So let me see if I can if I can investigate a little bit further and get somewhat of a better explanation. But yeah, that's right now all I got for you is the Rashi and that it's a Ganai. Amar Rav Yasi, Amar Rav Yochanan. So the Gemara starts off the discussion. We're now starting the Gemara on the bottom of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Arba Amos Shamar Chutz Mishal Psachim. Now it's true that each one is going to get four Amos, but that is in addition to the doorway. Okay, a major theme alert for the rest of today's daf is the following. You obviously, the courtyard is going to lead to your house. So you have basically your front walkway. Okay, it doesn't have to necessarily be a walkway, but the understanding is that when you open the door to your house, so that little area is really important. You're going to have to put things down. You're going to have to open the door. So that area really is exclusive to you. It's dedicated to you. And that is exactly the point that Rav Asi is making in the name of Rav Yochanan. That yes, it's true that the courtyard is going to be needed four amos, three amos for each one, but that's in addition to the four amos that you have directly in front of your house. So that means as follows. If we can draw a line going from one side of the door to the other side of the door, and from there into the courtyard four amos, so that area is dedicated to you. Now, after that, then you look at the rest of the courtyard, and then and only then can we force a division when you're getting, in addition to your walkway, four amos for each participant of the courtyard. Let's see the Gemara inside. Amar Vasi, Amar Yochanan, Amar Amos, Amar Chutz Mishal Pesachim. Tanya Meach. The Gemara quotes a brisa supporting this very idea. So in Cholkin Esachatzer Sheyabash Shmona Amos Lazev Shmona Amos Lazev. So the brisa talks in terms of eight amos. Now wait 1 second. What do you mean eight amos? The Mishnah said four. V'ha'anan Tanan Arba Amos Lazev Arba Amos Lazev L'Shma Mina Kedur Aviasi Shma Mina. So once we have the rule of Ravasi, so then we totally understand the brisa. The Mishnah was talking about, in addition to the four amos that you have right in front of your house. Now, Ikad Ramalei Mirma, we're going to learn the same information, but just present it slightly differently, but it's the same point. And that is that we're going to look at the Mishnah, we're going to look at the Braisa side by side. It's going to obviously be difficult, and we're going to resolve it using Ravasi. Tanan, we learned in the Mishnah, in Chokan Eschatzi, Achei Barba Amos Azev, Arba Amos Azev, Atan Yishmon Amos Azev, Ushmon Amos Azev. So the Mishnah says 4x4, the Braisa says 8x8, Amar Ravasi, Amar Yochan, Arba Amos, Amar Chutz, Mishap Sachim. That's exactly the point that the Mishnah was just talking about after going over the walkway. The Braisa was talking about in addition to the walkway. I should have read the Rashi in the first Rashi in the Gemara earlier, but I'll read it now. Chutz Mishal Pesachim, the significance of the walkway. Rashi writes, Chaser Shal Shneim, Shnei Batim Psuchim L'Socha. Two homes are opened up to the courtyard. And the four amos that are in front of your house are tsorech habayis. Those are the key words of Rashi. Lefarik maso me'al chamaro. That's where you're basically unloading in front of your house. It's basically, it's right. It's your loading and unloading zone. For those of you who have good memories of Manhattan. V'chutz me'osendal amos tzarech she'ar ba'amos l'shar tashmishan. And that means then that already is dedicated to you. And then you need, in addition to that, another 4 amos in order to divide the courtyard.
But 8x8 is not twice a 4x4, it's 4 times 4x4.
Right. In other words, the way I described it earlier, where the measurement is, right, basically both length and width, so the doorway does not necessarily reflect another 4x4. Okay. The Gemara is going to kind of touch on that coming up right now. Okay. Back to the Gemara. So Rav Huna says that the courtyard is going to be divided based on the number of doors into the courtyard. And that means as follows. According to Rav Huna, you have a courtyard now that is going to be divided amongst multiple residences of the courtyard. Rav Huna has a very interesting way of division, and that is as follows. Let's say it's a common courtyard that's between two houses. One house has one door opening up to the courtyard, and the other house has two doorways opening up to the courtyard. So now, if we could express this in an algebraic expression, so that means that one is x and the other one is 2x. Basically, what we're going to do is we're going to take the courtyard, we're going to amass its total area, we're going to divide it by 3, and then one is going to get 2x and the other one is going to get x, and the division of the courtyard is going to be in ratio to the amount of doorways opening up into the courtyard. Rav Chista says, no, that is not the way the courtyard is going to be divided. But rather, first, what we're going to do is we're going to give everybody their loading zone that's in front of their doorway, the 4 amos in front of their doorway, and after that, whatever's remaining in the courtyard is going to be measured, and it's going to be divided evenly based on the number of houses there are. Meaning, if there are two houses, it's going to be a 50-50 division, not a 2x versus x division, according to Rav Chista. Tanya Gavasa to Rav Chista, the Gemara now is going to quote a brisa that is going to be fully supportive of Rav Chista's shita. Psachim shebechatzu yesh lam arba amos haya leze pesach echad veleze shnei psachim. Let's say you have two houses opening up into a courtyard. One has one doorway opening up, the other one has two. The one that has one doorway has 4 amos. Now, the 4 amos over here is a description going outbound from the door. The one that has two doorways is going to have 8 amos. 8 amos meaning 4 amos for one door and another 4 amos for another door. So 8 over here does not mean 8x8. It simply means 4 going out, one from one door, 4 going out from the other door. And then the rest of the courtyard is going to be evenly divided amongst the two houses. And the division is not per doorway, it's per house. If let's say one has a doorway that's 8 amos wide, so in other words, from doorway from end to end actually is 8 amos. So he's going to be getting 8 amos corresponding to the Pesach and 4 amos in the Chatzir. What does that mean? The Gemara asks exactly that question. Arba amos bechatzer ma'avidatay. What does that mean? 4 amos in the chatzer. Amar Rabbi Hachikam. Rabbi says no. Pshat in the brisa goes like this. No tel 8 amos beorech hachatzer va'arba amos berochav hachatzer. Meaning that in terms of measuring how much he's getting for his loading and unloading zone, it's going to be 8 amos laterally, meaning from one end of the door to the other end of the door, and from there going into the courtyard, 4 amos. That's what's meant by the brisa. Amar amemar. Okay, so we have now discussed this idea of a loading and unloading zone. So that when you have a house opening up into a courtyard, and even when we're going to divide the courtyard, that comes in addition to your 4 amos in front of your house, which is basically your loading and unloading zone. Now the Gemara goes on to explain that there may be other situations in your courtyard where there may be this idea of a loading and unloading zone. Amar Meimar, I pay de souffle. Let's say you have pay de souffle. What does that mean? Rashi. Rashi writes, Mishi Yeshlo Chafir Bechatzer Shnosim Ba Garine Tamarin Lamaicha Behema. Let's say you have a large hole in the middle of your courtyard where the dates The pits of the dates are placed over there, and who enjoys eating that?
Animals.
Your animals. So yesh la'arba amos bechasel chol svivo seha. So therefore, it also has a loading and unloading zone, and in a dalan amos that goes fully around the hole. So the owner of the hole has rights and access to it for amos all the way around. So Amar Amemar, second to last line on the Amud. High period the Sufli Ishlo Arba Amos the Chol Ruach Veruach. The Gemara says, but that's only if it does not have a dedicated entrance. Aval. However, if it has a dedicated entrance, so then the owner of that chafir, the owner of the hole, only gets four amos as you are entering into it. Amar Rav Huna, achsadra in lo dala amos. Now let's say you have an achsadra. Four poles, a roof on the top of it, a very simple edifice, but it's certainly not a house. A house is mostly defined by, obviously, the roof on top, but also the walls going down the sides. So here it's an achsadra. You are not given dala amos with your achsadra. So time amai mishum pirik amaso. Because again, the whole purpose of the four amos in front of your house is because of loading and unloading. But hachav shadai lagavel mafarik. But over here, being that there are no walls, you don't need a loading and unloading zone. What do you want to do if you want to unload? You'll bring the animal underneath the pavilion, and then you unload over there. So, Mesav Rav Sheshes Echashari Batimechashari Echsajos Yeshlam Dal Amos. The Brisa seems to indicate that there are four Amos. So, Kitanya Iba Echsaja de Bey Rav. So, the Gemara says we're talking about Echsaja de Bey Rav. If I could describe it the best way I imagine it, basically it's the modulars that we have. You know, we have one here on our campus, right? The Young Israel has modulars. Basically, you need a classroom, so you set up a modular. So that's what we're describing over there. So the Gemara says, "Achsadra de Beirav Pshita in Drunamalyeh." The Gemara says, "Okay, but a modular, when all said and done, it's got a roof, it's got walls, it's a building. I understand it's a modular, but basically it's a building. So there's no real chiddush over there. Obviously, you need a loading and unloading zone over there. Ela b'achsadra ramisa." So the Gemara says that we're talking about a Roman achsadra. Rashi describes Roman achsadra does have walls going all around, but the walls don't go all the way to the ceiling. So it's a pavilion with some sort of makeshift walls going around it. So there, that's a little bit more of a chiddush. You could have made the argument that that should not have a loading and unloading zone in front of the door because they have some semblance of walls around it. It also will deserve a loading and unloading zone. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. From this point in time, we finished the discussion of the Gemara of Staka, taking us to the Mishnah, describing the division of a courtyard. The basic idea is that when two partners are divided, each one of them need a significant amount. Shmo alav, where whatever I'm getting still has the same utility to it. And then the Gemara had a discussion regarding exactly how to measure the division of a courtyard. We learned about the loading and unloading zone, and we finish off today describing various buildings that are going to get a loading and unloading zone.